This episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by Grammarly. Get 20% off Grammarly Premium when you sign up at grammarly.com/creative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, including The Motivation Code, releasing 1 week from today. And if you pre-order and register the book at themotivationcode.com before October 6th, before it releases next Tuesday, then you're going to get the full M-Code assessment absolutely free. It's a $49 value, but you have to go to themotivationcode.com. Pre-order and register the book before October 6th in order to take advantage of this pre-order offer. I can't wait to get this book into your hands. I think it's going to change a lot of lives. So I'm very excited about it. All right. So one thing that I hear very often from leaders or just in conversation is many leaders wrestle with or struggle with how to lead people who are from different generations. Right. And so you often have people from one generation leading people from a different generation. And frankly, even today, you have people who are perhaps in a millennial generation who are in leadership roles where maybe they're leading boomers or they're leading Gen Xers or they're leading Gen Z, which is sort of the latest generation to emerge into the workforce. And so on today's show, we have an expert in generations. His name is Jason Dorsey. He has just co-authored a brand new book called Zconomy. And today he's going to help us understand Generation Z and specifically what is it that they want? What are they great at? What are some ways that we can interact with, collaborate with them, and lead them more effectively? So we'll have that conversation with Jason Dorsey coming up here in just a few minutes. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Grammarly. Whether you're communicating with your team online or working on a project, Grammarly is the digital writing tool you can always rely on to get your message across clearly and effectively. Grammarly works across multiple platforms, including Gmail, Google Docs, and Slack. And there's more to writing than just catching spelling mistakes, right? Grammarly can help you write confidently no matter where you are. Grammarly is a digital writing assistant that helps more than 20 million people put their best words forward. Signing up for a Grammarly account is free and gives you real-time spelling and grammar checks as you write. It works where you work, so you can communicate with clarity and confidence on every platform. And if you want deeper insights on your writing, Grammarly Premium gives you advanced feedback on tone, word choice, punctuation, and more. Listen, I make my living writing words. I do. I'm an author. And it's amazing to me how often, I mean, I like to think of myself as a pretty good writer. It's what I do for a living. And yet it's amazing to me how often I discover ways that I can improve my writing or maybe little mistakes, grammatical mistakes that I'm making that I don't catch, but Grammarly catches them. It's incredible at elevating your writing, at taking, no matter how accomplished you think you may be as a writer, Grammarly will take you to the next level by offering clarity suggestions, vocabulary suggestions. You know, it will help you become more effective in how you write. And by the way, if you want to elevate your game and if you want to go to the next level in your career, whether that's attracting more clients or getting a promotion, how well you write is critical in that effort. Grammarly Premium helps you write like a pro with advanced real-time feedback. You can level up your writing for work, for school, or for personal projects. And Premium features advanced suggestions on grammar, punctuation, sentence structure, and style. So here's the deal. You can get 20% off Grammarly Premium when you sign up at grammarly.com/creative. Again, that's 20% off Grammarly Premium at grammarly.com/creative. Creative, grammarly.com/creative. We thank Grammarly for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Also, before we dive in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by The Working Podcast from Slate. How does an opera singer learn a new role? How does an actress find the perfect accent for her character? What does the director of a TV drama do all day? Those are the questions that Ruman Alam, Isaac Butler, and June Thomas put to creative people every week on Working. Learn how writers outline novels, how composers get jobs and get paid, and how YouTube creators learn to look into the camera lens. Listen to Working from Slate every Sunday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Well, it's so great to have on the show today, phenomenal thinker, researcher, writer, speaker. I mean, he just does it all. He's just released a new book. It's called Zeconomy, How Gen Z Will Change the Future of Business and What to Do About It. Most importantly, let's welcome to the show, Jason Dorsey. Welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Thrilled to be here. Big fan. And what an honor to get to be on here with you, Todd. So thank you so much.
So I've got to say, okay, before we dive in, I got to say, but we both spoke last year at the Global Leadership Summit pre-pandemic, which was quite a treat to get to do that pre-pandemic, right? We had no idea what was on the way. But something that you did in the middle of your talk there still to this day is like one of the most memorable moments in any speech I've ever seen. You said, how many boomers are in the room? And people raised their hand and you're like, oh, look at all those watches. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'd never considered that before, but nobody under a certain age would even think about wearing a watch. And it was just such a great teaching moment, right? It just so completely blew me away.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, you know, we study generations and particularly their relationship with things like technology and information, how they learn and develop and so forth. And it is interesting that for a whole generation, wearing a watch was not only a status symbol for lots of them, but how they were on time. And in fact, they're the generation that usually is early. As my baby boomer dad loves to say, you're 5 minutes late. 5 minutes early or 10 minutes late. And I'm always like, Dad, if I'm early, we just got lucky. All the lights were green. Everything worked in our favor. We're fine. but it's interesting because it's helpful for other generations to see that too, because they might go like me, well, I would never consider wearing a watch. And it's those sorts of things that humanize without, you know, picking on people, which I think so often the generational conversation becomes, but really just starts to say, hey, we all have different experiences in the world, often by generation. If we understand those, we can lead across to those. We can communicate, motivate, and really strengthen organizations, which is obviously my passion.
Yeah. Okay. So you've spent your career really studying generations. Tell us a little bit more about your work and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I got into this. I wrote my first book when I was 18 years old, which now seems sort of wild to think that I wrote a book when I was 18. After spending the last 2 years writing this book, I'm like, what was I thinking at 18? But the way I got into this is my first books and work was all around millennials. Even before we were called millennials, I'm a millennial. We were called Gen Y. And before that, we were just young adults and so forth. So I was really focused on that. And I ended up doing all these TV shows talking about what I had learned. And so I was on 60 Minutes and the Today Show and The View and The Early Show and all these shows. And so I just spoke all around the world, wrote a lot of books about millennials. And then what happened is once I was on 60 Minutes, everything changed. Because instead of me speaking to millennials about how to overcome excuses and, you know, make life work no matter where you're starting out and so forth, everything switched to employers calling and they were like, Jason, we've hired your people. They're terrible. Their pants are falling off. They live with their mom. They won't work on their birthday. Like, what is wrong with you people? And I'm like, whoa, whoa, I'm one of these people, you know? And I'll never forget the moment I was in a boardroom. It's a real famous company. I was in this boardroom and they wanted me to come in and talk about millennials in the context of other generations. That's what I was doing. And the CEO basically said some really negative things about millennials, which I was sort of used to hearing and then having to overcome and sort of win people over because I think every generation is valuable. Well, he made these claims about employment turnover with millennials, basically said that we're always leaving and, you know, we don't stick around. Is it worth training us? So I, not knowing any better, just said, would you send me your data? If you could just send me your data, I'd love to see it. And then I can sort of contextualize the problem and figure out maybe there's some solutions. So they sent me their data and I'll never forget it. I opened it up, I was going through it on my laptop, and the data that they sent me from this huge company, this public company, did not match what the CEO had just said in the boardroom. And I went to my wife, who has a PhD, her name's Denise, she's also the co-author of Zeconomy, and I said, Denise, you know, this is the strangest thing. I was just in this boardroom with these incredibly smart people, and the CEO said with great conviction that millennials weren't good employees, and then they sent me their data, and it turns out millennials are very good employees. I said, what do you think we should do? And she says, I think we should start a research company. She said, because if we can give people accurate data to cut through all the noise of what they need to know about each generation, then they can be better leaders, better marketers, better salespeople, and even be more creative. And so that got me fired up. And that's how we founded the Center for Generational Kinetics, which is our research and strategy firm. And what's really wild is, we didn't found it with like a business plan and all that. We wanted to separate myth from truth about generations. And since then, we've had over 700 clients. We've done more than 65 generational studies around the world. We have studies going right now across Europe, Asia, obviously the Americas. And it's amazing because we never know what we're going to uncover. And sometimes we find things that we get really fired up about. And sometimes you find something like, ooh, yeah, that's not great news.
Right. Okay. So this new book focuses on, I guess, what we could call Gen Z, right? Which, I know a lot of the focus has been on millennials for the last several years because sort of they were emerging into the workplace and even emerging into leadership roles, and people were really wrestling with, okay, how do we manage? I mean, as a Gen Xer, I am like pretty, not squarely in the middle of Gen X, but I'm like sort of like a late Gen Xer, right? All of the buzz among Gen Xers has been about millennials, and now we've got a new generation emerging, right, beginning to emerge into the world, Gen Z. So who is Gen Z?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's a perfect tie-in because when we think about Gen Z, what we know is that the oldest members of Gen Z are already 24 or 25 years old. They're turning 25 this year. And the key differentiator that we discovered in our research, we talk a lot about in the book, is that Gen Z does not remember 9/11. It's one of our biggest discoveries. We've been talking about this for more than 5 years now, because knowing that helped us to uncover where the millennial generation ended and where the next generation started, because it's a generation defining moment for one generation, and it's always been history to another. And that's a huge deal in our work because we're behavioral researchers. So we're trying to understand the why behind the way people move in the world. And as we think about Gen Z, not only are they already 25, right now they're the fastest growing generation on a percentage basis in the workforce. They're the number one most important group of consumer trendsetters. And for the first time, we're seeing the youngest generation, which is Gen Z, drive technology adoption up to the oldest generations. So that's the reverse of what it's been before. Historically, older, more affluent drove tech trends down. Now we're seeing as the youngest are actually driving those trends up. And Gen Z is very different than millennials. And in fact, we think the reason that, the book has done so well and, all this amazing speaking and TV and opportunities we're getting is because people are realizing very quickly that Gen Z is not millennials 2.0, which is something we talk about a lot. And that's important because you can't just pick up your playbook for millennials and then drop it in on Gen Z and think it's going to work. This generation has different parents. In fact, their parents are Gen X, your own generation and my wife's generation. They're also older millennials. And the number one thing that those parents told us in the interviews is, we don't want our kids to end up like those entitled millennials. So they're intentionally parenting differently. And that's interesting to me because the other thing we found about millennials is that millennials who are not entitled are the ones most offended by millennials who act entitled at work. Sort of a little known fact, but we think the rest of the generation has given us a bad reputation. And when we look at Gen Z, what really jumps out at us, their relationship with technology is very different than any previous generation. They do not remember a time before social media. And what's interesting is millennials migrated to social media, but Gen Z doesn't remember a time when social media didn't exist. They also don't remember a time before smartphones. I'm sure you remember this stuff where, the little kids go up to the TV screens and try to swipe it or pinch it and act like it's an iPhone because that's all they've ever known. So I found, Gen Z trusts social media so much. They trust it more than traditional media, which is incredible. And so the book really dives into what does it take to understand the generation, what shaped them, and then what do you do on the employee side to recruit, retain, motivate, and develop them, but also on the consumer side, because they are driving all these trends. How do you drive initial trial, and how do you get people, a whole generation that may never carry cash or use a checkbook, to buy from you and become loyal? That's right. Sort of an interesting question, right?
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm curious, I think we all know that there are generational differences. And I think it's easier to see those generational differences maybe between, say, boomers and Gen X or Gen X and millennials, right? Like you could sort of maybe see like there are some, because over those differences have emerged over time. And so we've been able to observe that for much longer. What are some of the key differences that you're finding between millennials and Gen Z?
Oh, such a great question. Yeah. Well, and sort of underlying the question, you make this brilliant observation, which is as behavioral researchers, a lot of the behaviors take time to develop, and you've got to be able to look back across time to see the differences. It's sort of like when you're trying to figure out if when a recession ends, enough time has to pass that you can look back in the past and go, oh, that's where it ended.
Right.
Generations are a bit like that because we need enough time to pass to see these differences. But we've been doing our State of Gen Z annual study for 5 years now. And so we're able to go back now already 5 years and see the differences. So the number one difference we're seeing between Gen Z and millennials, and this is a huge difference, is that Gen Z is much more practical or frugal with their money. What do I mean? Gen Z came of age around the Great Recession. And you'll hear people say, oh, Gen Z struggled in the Great Recession in the workforce. No, they didn't. They were 12. You know, they're in seventh grade, right? That's just nonsense. But their parents struggled, or a parent struggled, and they saw it on the news, and they heard people losing their houses, and that, you know, the millennials all had to move back home. So all of that hit Gen Z at a very formative time. And the key is you have to be old enough to understand what's going on, process it, really like deeply understand what's going on, and at the same time, young enough for it to change your trajectory, to change some of your attitudes and your views. So this is where we like to help people separate between life stage and generation, right? You stay in the same generation, but you pass through different life stages. And Gen Z was at the exact right life stage where the Great Recession really impacted their views of money. So what are we seeing? Gen Z is driving double-digit growth at thrift stores. Their savings rate is much higher than millennials. 12% of Gen Z were already saving for retirement before age 22, which is wild. I mean, that's just incredible. They like to use coupons. They expect a good deal. And their top driver is value. And so we talk to them about that in terms of purchasing. They really want to get a great discount, or they want to make sure it's going to last a long time. Like, either one of those works because it's really about value and utility, but fundamentally they need to know that they're going to get a good deal. They think they can always return things if they don't like it. I mean, it's just a different way to think about money. In fact, in one of our State of Gen Z studies recently, we saw that the number two thing that Gen Z wanted from an employer was benefits, which is shocking, right?
Yeah.
It's like, what 23-year-old says, gosh, I really want to know about retirement matching. Well, Gen Z does, right? It's just so interesting. So they've got this sort of practicality or pragmatism around money, which we see them bring in. The second thing we see is they have a different social causes that they're really drawn to. And what I mean by that is, for the last 5 years, as we've tracked them, we're always asking, what do you most look for in a brand, in an employer? What are you passionate about? These sorts of things. And historically, for the last 4 years, climate change, or what Gen Z would call a climate crisis, was a top most important, most emotionally charged social cause. But in the last 12 months, it flipped, and really in the last 6 months. And now it's things like social justice and equality and so forth. And so all of a sudden, those flip-flopped, and that has now is much more emotionally intense. But what we're seeing is those social causes are different than millennials and other generations, in terms of emotion in particular, but also order, because we get pretty nuanced. So what they're looking for companies to do and be about is different than other generations, and they expect way more of that, right? They're the most diverse generation in the history of the U.S. and in many countries around the world. So they expect not just diversity, but they truly expect inclusion. And so we look at this already. They're more practical with their money. They're thinking about social causes from employers, not just the brands that are selling to them, but where they're going to work. And their relationship with technology is fundamentally different than other generations, because they've always known mobile technology. And not only that, they're the number one generation that has received recommendations. And what I mean by that is, because of AI, Netflix is probably the easiest example, but also YouTube and all these, you know, Gen Z goes somewhere, they search for something, they watch that show. But then what we find is so much of the content they consume is what's recommended next, and not the content that they actually went there to get, which is fascinating. And so now these recommendation engines are extremely important to them. And so they're bringing that into everything that they do, and we'll see it really impact education. And then what I think strikes me, because we're doing a lot of research around COVID-19 for our clients, because they want to know how COVID-19 is impacting their business and how do they adapt. What we saw is that Gen Z was the number one generation right now to lose their jobs, to have a reduction in wages or reduction in hours. The flip side that we're finding, and this is sort of gets into the weeds, but it's super interesting, and we talk about this a bit in the book, the oldest members of Gen Z, the 18 to 25-year-olds, we believe are going to have the most negative time during the pandemic, and the reason is it's hitting them in those transitional times when they should be becoming increasingly self-reliant, right? Moving out of the house, going to college, moving forward with their career, working, you know, shoulder to shoulder, and those kinds of things. But the younger members of Gen Z, and this is the twist, we think the younger members of Gen Z may end up using this whole pandemic and turning it into a positive. And the way we see that is, my daughter's a great example. She's 9. She's in fourth grade. She goes to school on Google Classroom. I was with her earlier today. She was uploading her presentation. It was in English and in Spanish. It was fully animated. She presented it, she recorded it, and she's going to get a video back of the teacher with her comments. And yeah. She's 9, and she thinks it's normal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, it's funny. So I'm raising 3 Gen Zers right now as well. They're all teenagers. So they're maybe a little more on the front end of the Gen Z curve, right? Yeah. But our oldest, just one day we found out he had recorded and like released an entire album of music on his own and had done it all, had figured it out, had, you know, released it, had done the whole deal all from like his laptop in his bedroom. And like, it's just, they have this way of just like, oh, there's a tool. I want to do something. I'm going to figure it out and just do it, you know, versus I think back in my day, I would have been worried about like, well, what's everybody going to say? And I don't know. And can I do this? It's very complicated. And what's the technology? You know, it's like a totally different mindset. It's like, if I can do it, I'm just going to do it. Why not do it? It's right there. I'll just put it into the world.
Yeah, it's exactly. And this is where, you sort of made that joke earlier about the Gen X to millennials and the differences there. This is what's most interesting. We think that Gen Z could leapfrog some of the millennials in the workforce, because if you look at what they want, they tell us they want stability. They already have higher retention at many companies. Pre-COVID, they had higher retention, meaning lower turnover, than millennials at the same company, which is shocking given they're younger, and they think they're going to have to work longer. So they're avoiding debt. They're trying to get out of college with as little debt as possible. That's why many of them aren't going right now, because they don't think they're getting value from it. At the same time, they want to work somewhere and build a career, and they're very careful with their money. So you start to put it all together, and they end up on paper looking a lot like baby boomers, which is really wild. That's why we call them a throwback generation. But we also think they could be better positioned to leapfrog some of the millennials in the workplace, which is the irony that the next sort of generational collision or clash is actually going to be millennials to Gen Z.
Oh, fascinating.
So yeah, it's so cool.
Okay, so I want to sort of bring this home for people who are working with, collaborating with, or leading people who are Gen Z. So if let's say that we're managing someone who is Gen Z, what are some things that we need to be considering as we are engaging in relationship with them and trying to lead them in the course of their work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing we found that's very different with Gen Z is engagement truly starts at onboarding. And this is there's a whole section of the book all about this, because the sort of the pre-work period is very important to them. And what we're seeing right now, the best onboarding is actually by text message, which is a real shift, but it's growing very quickly. And so text messages being sent with videos, things to prepare them, ask some questions. Hey, what's your favorite snack at 3 o'clock when your energy's low? And then they show up to the first day of work and they have a bunch of those snacks on their desk, or they get them sent to home if they're working from home. Like, so onboarding and really creating expectations is very important, because Gen Z is entering the workforce later than any previous generation. So a lot of things you might expect somebody their age to already know, they simply haven't learned in the workplace because they haven't been in the workplace. That doesn't mean they won't do a great job, a fantastic job, but they still need to learn it. So what we are seeing is a greater emphasis on the skills and the mindset to be successful in the workplace. And I think that's a big shift. You know, that was something that started with millennials, but has really accelerated because Gen Z is entering with even less work experience, and they're entering much later than other generations. And there's all kinds of reasons behind that. So we're seeing that front end is very important. The second thing we see right now is that Gen Z needs more frequent communication than any other generation, dramatically more than some generations. But what we mean by that is they need sort of quick hit feedback. And again, we talk about how to do this a lot in the book. And what it means is the overall amount of communication can be less. They don't want an hour with you, or 30 minutes, or 15 minutes, or even 10 minutes. What they want is a quick text message, or an instant message, or something that just says that you know that they exist. That little quick check-in drives massive engagement. And what we're finding right now is if they don't get more frequent communication, particularly in this remote work environment, they think they're going to get fired, or they think something is wrong because they haven't been through an experience like this. The next thing that we see is they really want to collaborate, and they very much are willing to use different technologies to do that. And so for them, just to the example of your own family, like, they're not scared to use these technologies. They expect it. In fact, people say frequently, oh, Jason, they have such high expectations of technology in the workforce. I'm like, no, they don't. It's just the only technology they've ever known. Like, that's all they've ever worked with. Right. So it's just what they bring in. So we're seeing that certainly play out. And then what we're seeing is that they are very much into talent development. And this isn't the, hey, I'm going to invest in you so you can get promoted faster. We're not talking about that. But truly developing their skills. In fact, the top two things that they tell us they want are problem solving and presentation skills, which I find really fascinating because both of those are highly valuable to employers. And then I would say the last thing really is that social cause piece. And what we're finding is that Gen Z really wants to work for a company and a boss that has a commitment beyond just money. And the important thing here is many companies sort of for decades basically said, oh, we're going to write a check and that'll be our, you know, commitment to making the world a better place. And as I always like to joke, so there you are on the football field with a massive check trying to woo a generation that has never seen a check and in cursive on it. Right. Great work. You know? Right. What they want to know is, what did you actually do in the community? Do you get some extra time off to go volunteer? How are you supporting things locally that they're going to drive by or walk past? That's incredibly important to them, not the big donations. That's why you're seeing so much of the pushback of the companies that said, oh, well, we just gave money to that cause. That doesn't really mean anything to Gen Z. They want to see that's really rolling up your sleeves. And what's interesting about all these is none of it is pay them more money or we're going to dramatically raise your costs. Most of these things are free or very low cost. It's just knowing to do them and then recognizing that for just slightly more effort or different effort, you can have much greater return. And I think that's what leaders want, right? It's very efficient and it unlocks their own potential. And ultimately, other generations are going to want many of the same things too, as we're already seeing.
Yeah, yeah. And as that, as often happens, right, younger generations actually define expectations and reality for older generations, you know, and they sort of lead the way in that capacity. What final words of advice would you have for those in the marketplace? I know there are people right now who are out there in jobs where they're creating for Gen Z, right? They're actually building brands and they're trying to figure out how do we connect with Gen Z. What final words of advice would you have for people who are in that position?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, marketing is one of the biggest areas where we work and marketing around creativity and so forth. And one of the things that we have found, especially over the last 2 years, is that a lot of the persona development that's supposed to represent Gen Z doesn't actually represent them. And part of the reason we see for that is people think back, even millennials think back and go, I remember what it was like to be 22 or 18 or whatever. And the reality is the world today through the lens of that 18 or 22-year-old is dramatically different. And so what we have found is it's very important to do some research to really bring to life accurate personas and as much personalization as possible, because Gen Z really expects that way more so than just sort of the customization of years past. And so getting those personas right is absolutely critical. And what I always talk with creatives about is, you know, instead of just sort of being creative about who the personas are and what they represent, one of the ways that we help creatives really win over leaders who are not creatives is we get them to do these generational snapshots where they'll take their customer base and then just create a simple pie chart by generation. And that is always this great spark to talk about creativity and also create sort of more currency within the organization about why we need to adapt to these different generations.
Yeah. Jason, I could just listen to you talk about this all day long. I really could. It's Thank fascinating. You. The depth of your understanding of all of this is just mind-boggling. And I really enjoyed the book. I know everybody else is going to enjoy it as well. The book's called Zeconomy, How Gen Z Will Change the Future of Business and What to Do About It. Jason, if people want to know more about you and your work, where can they go?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. The best place to go is either to my personal website, which is jasondorsey.com. I have lots of videos there and tons of free reports because we're all about sharing our research. And then if you really want to dig into the research, you can go to our research website, which is our research firm, and that's GenHQ, GenHQ.com. Again, tons of free reports, our State of Gen Z, all that's available there. And, you know, to me, one thing I do want to make clear is we don't believe that generations are boxes. This is one of our most important things, but we believe they're incredibly powerful, predictive, and helpful clues to faster connect with, build trust, and drive influence. But if we understand those clues, we can understand ourselves better and other generations, and that's what gets us really excited.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Hey, thank you so much. It's a real honor to get to be with you.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.